Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
Okay, let's talk about holidays and divorce.
It's meant to be the happiest time of year, isn't that how the song goes? But it's often a really stressful time for families, especially when alcohol is involved. But our friends at SoberLink want to help. SoberLink has teamed up with me, along with other divorce and family law experts, to provide information that could give you some real peace of mind during the holidays.
Everyone indulges during the holiday season, but if you're struggling with alcohol or your ex-spouses, it can be a really tricky time of year, especially if you're worried about the safety of your children.
And for those of you who still haven't heard about SoberLink, you guys, it is the solution if you are going through a divorce and a custody case involving alcohol.
Like you, SoberLink works hard to keep children safe, offering a remote alcohol monitoring system that is the gold standard because of its technology. Don't miss out on SoberLink's free guide for the upcoming holiday season.
You can request it today at www.soberlink.com/notsuck.
And now for the legal disclaimer. The How Not to Suck a Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
Oh my gosh. You guys, guess what? It's episode 40.
40?
Girl, 40.
That's old.
Man, I wish that it were older than we are, but sadly, no. Wait, is it older? It's younger than me. Wait, I don't even remember. Are we the same age?
Don't give away our secrets. I will never disclose that.
You're never going to disclose it. People don't Google her. Her secret must remain an age. Oh my gosh. Let's do this. We are here for another episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce.
With a will, please do not try this at home. This is probably your most important divorce homework, folks.
I find this fascinating. And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce. Okay, Morgan, how you doing? How you doing over there?
No complaints. I mean, I guess I could complain about everything, but there's no reason to do that because it would just put me in a mood. And you know what? I'm here. I'm with you. I'm alive and I have healthy children. So here I am.
God, that was disgustingly optimistic. I love that we both look like we had our hair curled earlier today and we're both wearing like black sweatshirts. We're like,
sweatshirts.
Here come the women in black. All right. I want to jump into obsessed because I actually found something today that dawned on me that I'm like legitimately have been obsessed with for years. And I think that this is something that you can get behind. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I love this segment because it brings about things that we didn't even know we needed.
Things that we're literally obsessed with. Okay, you may already know about this company. Have you heard of Mark and Graham?
Yes, but I don't quite know what they do.
Okay, so they are, it's a company that does like high-end handbags and accessories and houseware stuff, but they monogram everything. So it's very, oh my God, I wish that this was on video so everybody could have just seen Morgan's dog ears perk up and look at the camera when I said monogram.
Monogram. You know, I don't know.
I got your attention.
I don't want to comment yet, but I do have a love-hate relationship with monogram, so I'll get into it in a minute.
It's for being a Jewish girl, this is a very WASPy obsession of mine. I don't think the Jews are really into monogramming, last time I checked, but I love this company. And my latest find from them is I wish I brought it down here so I could show you. It's an oversized leather tote bag that I put my laptop in when I go and, you know, work remotely. It's gorgeous. Now it's high end. I want to say it's probably like just under $300, something like that. But then you can get your initials embossed in gold on it.
Is it embossed or embossed?
What's the difference? You're just making fun of the way that I talk right now.
It's just the Chicago accent.
You're the one from here. I'm from Texas. I should have been like embossed. Embossed. It's embossed. I can't do this tonight. It's embossed. It's embossed. But it's so nice. I have like a brown leather handbag from them. I've got this oversized navy tote. I bought some wine glasses that have like monogrammed, like the family name on it for a client of mine. I love, love, love Mark and Graham. I love Mark and Graham.
Okay. Mark and Graham, you sound fabulous. Andrea, that was maybe the most boring story I've ever heard out of your mouth. Sorry.
Well, this segment was not sponsored by Mark and Graham.
Oh my gosh, Mark and Graham, I'm sure you're fabulous, but Andrea's story was killer tonight. I'll just tell you before we jump into our guest, love hate relationships with monogram. Love it, but also think it's so overdone. And then there's all these weird fonts and everything just looks ridiculous. So it does,
but hey. You know what? It's a thing. It's here now, maybe not here tomorrow, which segues into what we're talking about today, here today, gone tomorrow. Kind of a morbid topic, but today we're tackling the topic of, wait for it, what happens if I die during my divorce? Everybody's favorite topic. I mean, my God. But apparently, Morgan, this is something that you actually get asked a lot.
Asked, and unfortunately, it happens. That's the thing. You don't think about it. You think, like, could anything get worse than getting divorced? Well, yeah, it could. You could die. And so the fact of the matter is, I know. And it doesn't happen a lot. And it's not something to even joke about. But at the end of the day, if you're really, truly wanting to just be amazing on all cylinders, you have to prepare for it. And that's why our next guest is so integral in what we're doing to help you not suck at divorce and just in general.
Well, one of the things that I found really interesting when I spoke to today's guest prior to this interview is that this whole land of what happens if I die while I'm getting divorced, it's not necessarily a land of gray, or doesn't have to be a land of gray. There's actually many things that you can do to ensure that things are just as and just where you want them to be in the unfortunate event that you die during your divorce or soon after your divorce. Oh my God, we're going to have to lighten this episode up. I can feel it already.
Well, that's all right. Our guest is super fun, regardless of the topic. So we are bringing on a real rock star today. Her name is Lauren Wolven, and she is a partner at LP in the Trusts and Estates Group. She's also a member of the firm's executive committee, and I might say that she was the first woman member of the firm's executive committee. She is a trailblazer and she speaks all over the country and handles cases all over the country. She's phenomenal and I can't wait to hear what she has to say today. Lauren, welcome to our show.
Thanks so much. I was actually really excited to join the show when you asked me. This is a topic I am so passionate about. I work with a lot of people who are going through the divorce process. And one of the first questions I ask is, who's a beneficiary on your life insurance? Who's a beneficiary on your retirement accounts? There are really so many low-hanging fruit type of issues that come up in the estate planning, you know, crossing divorce universe that I really love to talk about it and make people aware of all the different things that they can do.
Okay, so let's organize this so that people who are listening who don't have any background knowledge on what we're about to talk about, don't feel totally overwhelmed by what we're about to throw at them, like people like me. So let's start with three things that are relatively easy that will help you get your wishes in order. Let's start with the easy change. Number one, changing your power of medical attorney.
Yeah.
How do we do this? What's this about?
So the power of attorney for healthcare, the medical power of attorney, the healthcare surrogate, it's all the same thing. You're designating somebody to make a decision about what you want to have happen if you can't communicate to the doctors. And we're talking, you can't blink once for yes, twice for no. Okay. But if you're in that situation, you want to have an advocate. So I'm going to ask you a question, Andrea, which is you're divorcing someone. Do you really want that to be the person who's deciding whether or not to pull the plug?
That's a good question.
So, yeah, some people say yes, you know, it depends on your situation. Yeah. There's nothing in the law, though, that requires you to let your spouse be the one to make healthcare decisions for you. In fact, the law in every state gives you the right to designate a person to make those decisions. Any person you want. You can ask your attorney to do it for you. You can find a form online from your local bar association, but go out there and get that form and make sure that you're not letting the law default to your spouse, soon to be your ex-spouse.
I'm changing mine to Morgan just to put her on the spot, see what she does. If I can't blink once or twice, she'd love it. She'd pull. I'm like, no, Morgan, I'm totally fine. She's like, pull it, doctor. I'm like, I'm right here.
You can't do it for a paper cut.
Not yet. Morgan will change that. I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna bring a coin.
What do you have, Morgan?
Regardless of flipping coins on your health, you know, one thing you said that's amazing. A lot of people, even my high-end clients, don't always have a power of attorney, a medical attorney, I should say. So I appreciate that you told our listeners that they can simply go online, find a form, sign it, execute it. But my question is for you, Lauren, which is, let's just say they go on and they say, you know what, Andrea is going to be my medical because I'm starting a divorce. I don't really trust my spouse, et cetera. What should they do with that paper after they execute it? Where should it be placed?
Yeah, well, paper's only as good as somebody knowing that you have it, right? So if you fill it out, you take it home and you stick it in a drawer, it's not going to do you any good. So the first thing you should do once you have that document signed and filled out is to go when next time you go to your doctor or even just stop by your doctor's office. I mean, everything is digital now. The doctors all scan this stuff in. And so take it to your doctor's office, say, I have a power of attorney for healthcare. Can you scan this into my records? They'll do it. And then what happens is you could be in another state and get in a car accident and that hospital pulls up your name and your address based on your driver's license. And guess what? Those medical records are available to them. So it's a really powerful tool now that technology has sort of gotten into this medical space.
Does the person who's being assigned that responsibility need to know? Like, I'm just making sure that none of my Instagram followers are going to designate me as their power medical attorney now that Morgan mentioned it. And I'm going to be pulling the plug on people in Omaha.
Well, you can name anybody you want. They don't have to accept the job when the time comes, right?
Okay.
So folks, don't name Andrea unless you've discussed it with her.
Yeah, please don't. I'm not the one you want.
It has to be somebody typically who's a legal adult. So you can't name a child who's 16 or 17. And honestly, I would recommend probably not naming a child until they're maybe 25. It really requires a little bit of life experience to be able to navigate that. And it's very hard for somebody who hasn't adulted for a little while to be put in that position. But it's a very good idea to talk to the person that you're going to name, because research has shown actually that when they talk to individuals about give certain scenarios and they talk to them about what would you want in this situation, and then they talk to the person that individual has named as agent, and the answers are completely different. So it's not only important to ask that person if they'll do it, but also probably to talk to that person about some of your very basic wishes. So if they're put in that circumstance, they know what you want.
I like that. And you know, another idea for anyone who's going through a divorce besides your medical providers, give it to your divorce attorney. Because God forbid something happens during the case, that's when things kind of go haywire. Usually I'm the first one besides the police that gets a call if there's a real problem. And so having those documents just on my system would be amazing if something haywire goes, you know, wrong, which we don't want to have happen. So this is really, this episode is just planning for the worst. I always say plan for the worst, hope for the best. That's why we're having Lauren on, because that's her job and she's phenomenal at it. So we've hit number one, the number one to do. Now we're heading into the number two to do. But before we do, we have Andrea who's waving her hand over here. She's really excited about this topic.
No, I just want to recap because I'm still a little bit confused. We're telling people that the easiest way to do this is to pull a form from online. Now, is there anyone, like, if they have, like, is that the easiest and the only way to change your power of medical attorney? I just want to make sure that we're guiding people to the easiest way to do this.
You know, it depends. A lot of times, if you were to go into the hospital might have a form for you. You could potentially ask your doctor's office. They're very leery about playing lawyer. So, you know, really, it depends on the state. So certain states, their form is actually what we call a statutory form, meaning you could literally probably Google, you know, XYZ state healthcare power of attorney form, and you're gonna get that form. There is some benefit to going to an attorney, because a lot of times there are things that are not included in the standard form that might be things that we as attorneys have learned over time are really helpful if you have to deal with medical staff or to give certain guidance about issues. So you can go to a local bar association, right? So, you know, I'm in Chicago, I go to the Chicago Bar Association, or, you know, whatever kind of nearby major city. If you Google the such and such bar association, you're probably going to find a form that's readily available for you.
Got it. Okay. All right. Now I'm more clear.
Okay. So just to recap, legally, the best thing you can do is go to an estate and trust lawyer. That's the best thing you can do, consecutively before or after your divorce. If you can't afford it or it's not something that you can handle at that time, then what Lauren is saying is look for something online or your local bar association. So remember, number one is change your power of medical attorney. So that would be the most helpful thing. Now we're segueing into another number two to do. And it deals with life insurance. So I want to ask Lauren a few things about life insurance and what she suggests doing with life insurance. But why does life insurance matter in a divorce case? So let's talk about that before we hop in. Life insurance matters usually in my cases for a few reasons. One, to secure child support. So if you owe a duty of child support until the child is, for instance, 23 years old, they want to make sure that if someone dies who's paying child support, you're still caring for your child even upon death. And that's what a life insurance policy would secure. Same thing with maintenance, or formerly known as alimony. You're securing that payment that, God forbid, something happens to you and you die, the other person has some security. That's why it matters in divorce. So that said, let's talk about life insurance and what the second to do is with regard to life insurance.
So this one can be a real problem, even after divorce. This is probably your most important divorce homework, folks. Changing, updating your life insurance beneficiary designation. An insurance policy is a contract. It's not like estate planning documents. In most jurisdictions, your estate plan is going to automatically deem your spouse to be deleted upon entry of an order of dissolution. Not so for your life insurance policies, not so for your retirement accounts. So life insurance is going to be paid to whomever is listed as the beneficiary on the beneficiary form or however the insurance company wants you to designate. So the contract is going to say, here's how you designate a beneficiary. The last beneficiary that you designated, that's going to be the one who receives the funds. And I have had several cases where either somebody passed away during the pendency of a divorce or passed away after a divorce, even years after, and had never gotten around to updating a beneficiary designation. In fact, one we found where the beneficiary designation was completed and just had not been mailed in. And guess what? The money gets paid to whomever is designated and on file as that named beneficiary with the insurance company. So go ahead and change it now. If you're in the process of getting a divorce, don't risk your soon-to-be ex getting the benefit if you die during the pendency of the divorce.
Okay, so what Lauren is saying, breaking it down in divorce, is if you have an obligation in the divorce document, then yes, you have to keep a life insurance policy and that person as the beneficiary. But there's a lot of times that people don't even know that they have these life insurance policies and they've signed somebody up as a beneficiary. Where I see this happen a lot is, you know, in your job, when you accept a job, sometimes you get life insurance as part of your compensation. And, you know, if you've been at a company for 12 years, you don't remember who you put down as a beneficiary 12 years ago. I mean, your life could have been different. You could have not been married. Who knows what happened? So then you kind of forget about that policy. And then you go through a divorce. And that's the policy that you want to make sure that you maybe are changing with the beneficiary. So you just want to talk to your divorce lawyer. But Lauren's right. You want to get in front of that life insurance policy.
So wait, I'm confused yet again. So from what Lauren said, it sounded like you don't have to make your soon-to-be ex-spouse aware, or you don't need their consent, rather, to remove them from your policy. But Morgan, are you saying otherwise? Are you saying that in some cases, depending on different factors, that everything has to remain in place?
I'm saying that it's best to, I think Lauren is absolutely right, but it's best to talk to your divorce lawyer about that because okay. You don't want to get into a problem with the judge saying you're manipulating the status quo or anything like that, especially if you owe okay. A duty of support or alimony or maintenance. But okay. What I'm saying is in the cases where, you know, at the end of your case, you're going to have to get a life insurance policy anyway, but you have one through work that's very minimal. That's when you kind of want to go and change those beneficiaries because it's not going to be pursuant to your divorce and you don't want somebody winning the lottery, God forbid you die, and forget that you've named that person as the beneficiary. Does that help?
And I know like if you have a financial advisor, if your financial advisor knows that you're going through a divorce, that's going to be one of the first things that they're going to be on you about. Speaking from experience, because my dad is a financial advisor. So I remember that conversation quite vividly. So I know like it is something that you have to have like the conversation with your divorce attorney, your financial advisor, everyone. So everybody's on the same page. But I think for people who don't have a financial advisor, but like you said, signed up for a life insurance policy in a more passive way, we want to make sure that they're aware that they have this and they could be leaving a lot of money to someone who they might not want to be leaving it to. Isn't that just a pleasant thought? Oh boy, boy, boy. See, and I thought we would have to lighten up this topic, but no, it's just going swimmingly. Okay, let's round out the easy changes because this has been so easy. On to number three, this has to do with your estate planning documents. And I think that we're talking about a will here. Am I right in that, Lauren?
It could be a will. It could be a combination of a will with a trust. You know, it really depends on your financial situation as to what your attorney is going to recommend. But this is definitely something that I find that people feel really hesitant about doing during a divorce process. You know, the ground is sort of shifting beneath them, you know, and I hear so often from people who are in the middle of divorce that they just don't know what they want to do. They just can't make one more decision about what to do with their estate plan. And so I always tell people, you know what, even if you had the perfect decision now, typically I find that clients within about 18 months of their divorce becoming final, when they've sort of come into their, you know, new normal, they will come back to me anyway, and they're going to want to make different decisions. So don't let that stop you from updating the plan, particularly if you have young kids. You know, under state law, the person who's going to inherit the biggest piece of your estate typically is going to be your spouse until the divorce decree gets entered. So your kids might inherit something, but they're not going to get everything. So you want your voice to be heard, go and make a will. And if you have minor kids, you're going to want to create a trust for the children under the will. And what that is, it's you're not creating a separate document necessarily, you're not creating a separate legal entity. You're just putting words into your will that say, when I pass away, I want to give my money to trusted friend Betty, for example, to hold for my kids and use it for their benefit until they turn age 25, let's say, right? Because they can't have the money until they're 18, typically. Some places you can hold it back till 21. But this way you can sort of decide when they're going to receive those funds. And you get to keep things out of guardianship court, meaning that the person who you want to be in charge of the money isn't going to have to go to court and ask the judge for every little thing that they want to spend money on. And they're also not going to have to go to court every year and account to the judge for how they have been spending, investing, et cetera, that money that you have left for your kids. So creating that trust, even just those very simple words within your will document, will give you the ability to keep that money from being supervised by the court.
Okay, that was a lot. So I'm going to ask a few. I'm going to ask a few follow-up questions here. So let's just say one of our listeners is sitting there and they're thinking to themselves, okay, wait, I don't really have that much money in the bank. I have little kids at home and I'm getting a divorce. And will, that sounds good. Like everyone's in my mind kind of like, yeah, I got to get around to that. Trust, it's like, whoa, I'm seeing red here because I don't have any money. So do you still, if somebody's in like the, you know, middle class and they're getting divorced and they have these little kids, is that still something that you would advise, that a trust is the right way to go about in a will if you have the little kids still?
If you have little kids, I would probably still do it. Even if it's a small trust, it's really just a matter of your friend setting up a bank account that holds that money separately. But it would cost a lot more money for them if you don't call it a trust and put it in your will document, because then they're going to have to go to court to be able to manage that money for the benefit of your kids. And one of the biggest things is that if you don't designate it as a trust, typically what's going to happen is if you left the money outright to the kids, right, but they're minors, the surviving parent who is going to probably have parental rights and is probably going to have the right to be the guardian is also typically going to have the right to be the one to manage that money. So if you are very concerned about your former spouse being the person to be in charge of that money that you are leaving to your children, this is definitely something you want to add into your will.
Okay, so here's what I'm hearing if I'm breaking it down. So if you just heard legalese and you blacked out for the last minute, I'm hearing is Andrea's got her hands in her head.
What's happening?
I'm going to break it down. So number one, I think what Lauren is saying, and if I'm saying this incorrectly, Lauren, cut me off, but invest. It's a good idea if you have young kids, even if you don't have a ton of money, to invest now in a will and a trust, because it will save your children and your estate money on the back end if you were to die. Is that accurate, Lauren?
That is exactly what I was saying.
Okay. And then the second thing that you were saying is, listen, guys, if you die tomorrow and you've done it beautifully with a will, but there's really no trust in place as well, your ex that you may not love could get their grubby hands on your money and determine how to spend that for your children. So that is something that you may want to think about if you're not getting along well with your ex. Is that accurate, Lauren?
That is accurate. And actually, even if you are getting along with your ex and you say, well, I'm okay letting my ex just manage the money for the kids, if you don't leave it in trust and it just defaults to them by virtue of the fact that they're the guardian, the parent, that surviving parent, actually is still going to have to go to court to open a guardianship for their own children in order to be able to manage that money for them. So you've still got that extra step of going to court, spending the money every year, filing a report. It's a lot of headache. So, you know, if you want to ask somebody to be in that position, do them the favor of making their lives as easy as possible to be able to help you out.
It kind of goes back to what we talk about a lot on this show, which is being proactive so you don't have to be reactive, right? Like if you're planning and you're making these decisions before you're dead, then, you know, then you're going to just make things a whole lot easier for the people who, you know, survive your death and have to, you know, deal with everything. So, and I think, again, this is like the 1 millionth time maybe on episode 40 that we're saying this, but all the roads always lead back to hiring the right team for your case. If you have the right competent divorce attorney in place, helping you and guiding you, and a financial person in place, helping you and guiding you, and an estate person, you're probably not going to make a misstep. Am I right here, Lauren, or what else are you going to add to that?
You are. And there's really just one thing that I want to add, which is, you know, we talked a little bit about the power of attorney for healthcare, that you could go to a reputable source online, like your local bar association, to get a form. I wouldn't just generally Google for a form, but if it's the local bar association, that's going to be a reliable resource, or maybe local legal aid, right? But with a will, please do not try this at home. I know there's a lot of sample forms and I've seen people write them themselves. And I have had a number of cases where somebody comes to us and says, well, my so-and-so had this will, my parent, and we have to then go to court to try and effectuate that will. And guess what? They've been missing a bunch of different legal requirements. So we have to go hunt things down. We have to follow special processes. We may have to have a hearing in front of the judge. And it would have been so much cheaper to spend the money to just do the will the right way. And it might cost 10 times as much to try and then get it admitted and followed because somebody didn't want to do it the right way to start with.
So you can buy your birthday invitations on Etsy, but don't buy your will templates from Etsy.
Definitely.
That's right.
Absolutely. You know, definitely do not buy your will templates on Etsy.
Totally. Because if you think about it, I've actually run into this before where it's so ridiculous, but the reason that you use a lawyer is because they keep all your documents in one place and they have them. So if things go haywire, they know, oh, Lauren's the estate person. They have the will. You call them. The worst thing you can have is, you know, you've bought 10 different Etsy wills and, you know, you've done them different ways, signed them different times. And then God forbid you're gone and people are pulling out Etsy wills all over the house. And it's like, well, which will is the one, you know, and was grandma competent when she signed over everything to her 25-year-old boyfriend? Like, I don't know.
Oh my God. This is the will that had the dinosaurs in the background. Is that the one we wanted? No, I think it was the one with the flower mosaic done. I don't know. So many Etsy wills.
It's amazing. And you, I mean, people wouldn't believe some of the things that we actually do see and that we have to deal with when dealing with estate plans, especially do-it-yourself estate plans. Oh, and I always tell my husband, I say, this stuff wouldn't ever appear on a television episode of like Law and Order or a soap opera because nobody would ever believe that it's real, even though it actually is.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
Welcome to my world.
Okay. Hey, but it made it to this show. So it's appearing somewhere.
Okay. So we've talked about a beneficiary of a life insurance plan or a will or a trust. let's talk about, is there a benefit to having maybe backup beneficiaries? Because I know a lot of people, for instance, and we're going to get into kids and how they come into play more on the will shortly. But for instance, I know a lot of people want to say, hey, you know, I'm really close with my mom. I want her to be the beneficiary, but God forbid she dies. Then what happens? Do you put a backup beneficiary on the plan?
Absolutely. 100%. No equivocation. You want a backup beneficiary on your life insurance and your retirement accounts. Okay. It is very important. And in part, maybe this is coming because lawyers, we like to worry about everything and the what if and the what if and the what if. But there are defaults that are going to be built into what happens with the retirement account. And it's usually, you know, like running the gauntlet, trying to figure out what's going to happen with those funds and trying to get them released. It's much better if you have a beneficiary designation. So, you know, first you're going to want to say, I want this person, or if it's for your kids and you're putting it in a trust for the benefit of my kids under my will dated, you know, October 27th, 2022. And then, you know, maybe you're going to want to put the kids as the backup beneficiaries, because better to get it to them directly than not to get it to them at all. And so that's typically what we would recommend for our clients to do.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And that was really helpful. Before we head into the tips, I think one thing we have to hit very briefly is, what is there any way to, in your mind, and I'm lobbing this question at you because I think I know the answer because I deal with this a lot, but I want to hear from an estate planner. Is there any way to deal with putting kids in your will? So saying, I'm going through a divorce. If I die, I want Johnny and Janie to go to my brother. I don't want them to go to my wife. What happens if someone says that to you?
I will tell them that it's not going to be effective, most likely. So unless the person is unfit for some reason, the court is typically going to defer to the parental rights and is going to let that parent be the guardian of those kids. Now, it doesn't hurt to say that, because if your spouse passes away and hasn't named a guardian or hasn't done their own will, then your will is probably the one that the court's going to look at for the backup guardian. So it's never a bad idea to at least have the plan B, right? Or let's say you think your spouse might be declared unfit. Maybe they've got a substance issue or a mental health issue, and you have some concerns about them being in that role, then you might as well make your wishes known in that will. You just need to understand that courts always reserve the right to do what's in the best interests of the child. So even when it comes to drawing up a will and saying, here's who I want to be the guardian of my children, that's just a recommendation. And we always tell our clients that there's no guarantee that the judge is going to do what you ask, unless there's a reason not to, like the parental rights. They're typically going to defer to your request, but they don't have to.
Got it. And I agree with that 100%. And I'm glad that you know, put that out there, because that's the exact same thing that I tell my clients. But let's hop into the tips. What do you say? So let's talk about, if somebody hasn't started the divorce process, give us a few tips of what to do in your mind.
A few tips would be to really take a look at your estate plan. If you don't have an estate plan, you should probably go get one. If you do have an estate plan that's got your spouse in it, you should probably talk to your divorce attorney and then say, hey, is it okay for me to go update my estate plan? And if they say yes, then you go and you take care of that. Because if you don't want assets to pass to your spouse, or if you don't want your spouse in charge of assets that you want to leave to children, then you should really make that wish known and put it in a formal legal document. The other thing is, I would open a credit card just in your own name if you don't have one. It's less common with Gen X and younger, but I have seen many individuals, usually women, who were always getting joint credit with a spouse or who were never listed on a mortgage or car loan. You have to start building good credit if you haven't ever had your name on credit before. And even if you're happily married, I highly recommend it. So I've been married for 22 years. I still have a credit card that's just in my own name and I use it for all my internet purchases. That kind of ensures that it gets used regularly. And I'm constantly building my good credit by making all those internet purchases.
Is that the excuse? Because I should keep building credit too.
Andrea, I know, right? It's a perfect rationalization for the internet shopping, but it's also a really good way to just make sure that you're using it all the time. You know, if you don't want to put it on all your accounts, but if you have a favorite store or two, maybe put it on those just so that you know that it's going to get used and you're going to continue building that credit.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Build that credit, ladies and gentlemen. Just build
it. Are there particular types of credit cards, like for people who aren't so knowledgeable in this field, like would you say go open this type of a credit card? Don't open a TJ Maxx, Home Goods, Marshalls credit card. Like, are there types that you would direct people to that are better to build credit, or does it not really matter?
It doesn't really matter. I mean, honestly, credit is credit and they're all reporting to the same agencies. So it's, you know, when they go pull a credit score, all of those different credit cards are reporting to that same place. So just start somewhere, start wherever you can get a credit card. Maybe you're going to start small if you haven't had credit in the past, but if you're using it well and you're, you know, making your payments and things like that, your credit limit's going to go up and up and up. And at least if somebody, you go to buy a house or you go to buy a car and they go to pull your credit, you actually have a credit history as opposed to just a blank, which is much bigger problem.
Got it.
You know, one of the other things I would do is I would inventory your assets, right? So I see a lot of people who come to me for estate planning, but also who are in the process of a divorce, and they come to me and I will ask them to tell me what assets they have. And they don't know kind of off the top of their head what they have and where it is. And so it's really good idea to make sure it's a good time to take stock, right? So list out your life insurance policies, your retirement accounts, your bank accounts, you know, check who the beneficiaries are on the retirement and life insurance. If you're not going to update them right away, make sure you at least make a note to yourself to go ahead and update it as soon as that divorce is final and you know what you're allowed to do or if you have any obligations for maintenance, et cetera. But it's really important. One of the other things, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the making an inventory of your assets, get copies of your income tax returns from your accountant or wherever, if you didn't use an accountant, wherever you keep your copies, look them over. Sorry, Andrea, go ahead.
No. I was actually just scratching my nose. That wasn't the
okay.
I had a question. No, I'm into
all
this.
Right.
Love these to-dos because I feel like this is what's going to be most valuable to people because that's what we want to supply people with. There's all these things that you can do before you're in this situation. So girl, keep going.
It's like, true. And this is one, if you have not been in the practice of looking over your income tax returns before you sign them, highly recommend starting to do it, maybe going back and looking at them. And this is even if you're married and not contemplating a divorce, okay? You need to understand where your family's income comes from. Make sure you know about every account listed. One of the things I love to tell people to do is to check and see if there's a deduction taken for a safety deposit box. If so, did you know that you had a safety deposit box? Do you have any idea what's in it? So income tax returns are a little bit like playing the game of Clue and you're trying to figure out where everything is and, you know, who killed who with what. So I love the income tax return because you can always learn something.
And I love safety deposit boxes because when I see them and nobody seems to ever want to disclose them, I have gotten into numerous safety deposit boxes and in my career, and it's been just like a treasure trove. You don't know what you're going to find, and you can get a court order to go in and inventory the safety deposit box. And that is what's really fun.
I find this fascinating.
I've had some really fun safe deposit box reveals over the course of my career. So,
you know,
lots of cash and, you know, jewelry and watch collections and all kinds of crazy stuff. So,
wait, have you ever found like passports of people whom like weren't like like fake IDs and like crazy things like that? Have there ever been things that you're like, what the hell is this?
I like where your brain is.
Did I ever find a spy? No, I think the spies usually hide it not in the safe deposit box, but probably like somewhere else that's a little more discreet. So nobody's going to find it out when they pass.
Wait, okay. I'm getting excited now. Are we done with the tips or are there more tips? Because I really want to get into the crazy stories that you guys have experienced in your careers.
I actually have one more tip. So I'm going to make you like have that suspense. Just hang in there for those crazy stories.
Okay, I'm hanging.
But we talked about this a little bit earlier. If you update your power of attorney for medical or financial decisions, and we talked about earlier making sure you get a copy to your doctor. If you're going to update the one for financial decisions, right, which you should also do, you're going to want to make sure that you give copies of those new documents to any banks, financial or tax advisors who had the prior documents in their files. Because if they don't know that there's a new one, they're going to act using the old one if the time comes, and you don't want to have that old one used by accident. So be thoughtful about how many copies you go handing out to people at any point in time when you're doing your estate plan, because you might have to go sort of paste over those copies at some point in the future. And you want to make sure you remember where they are so that you don't have an old one floating around.
This is why I get all of mine from Etsy, because it's very easy to distribute. I can send a mass email. They're color coded. They've got cute little decals on it. Really. I don't know why you guys are knocking all of my Etsy wills and trusts and whatnot. Credit cards.
Morgan,
an Etsy credit card.
Morgan, I think we need to go shut down our Etsy account.
That, yes.
for her own myself. Good.
That and the bad online legal documents. Those are like the bane of my existence.
I feel like I'm really hitting up Morgan on all angles. I started out talking about monogrammed handbags, which really got her blood boiling. And now I'm talking about designing my will on Etsy. So burn, baby, burn. Speaking of crazy things, I can't wait anymore. I need to know, what are some of the crazy things that people have left or have not left, or like the weird stipulations? Like, I know there have been some stories that have made the news that we all kind of know about, but like, give it to me. Give it to me. We got to lighten this up. Give me something to hold on to while I go and open up a new credit card.
I mean, one of the ones that always, it's a little, morbid, but you don't say that you want to have your pets buried with you, particularly if one of them is still alive and be surviving you, because the people who then read your will and say, I'm supposed to have the pet euthanized so I can bury it with them. You don't want to have any misinterpretations of that. I had a situation where somebody told me that they once said that, you know, the will said, I want my 5 cats buried with me. The problem was when they showed up to collect the urns, one of the cats was still purring on the bed. And they said, yeah, I think I'm just not going to follow that. And they were not willing to do it. So you got to think about the pets. But I mean, the things that people fight over will always surprise you. Police scanners, pets, dining room tables, people don't actually want. That was one of the craziest cases I had. The client actually said to me that they didn't want the dining set. They just didn't want their sibling to have it. But that is I don't want it, but I just don't want you to have it, right?
I mean, I hear that.
Total siblings, right? But like when we were 5. It is so typical for people to fight about those little things, right? Not the big buckets of money. That's what everybody always thinks they're going to fight about. But most of the time, it's about these little things. Because it's psychology and emotion. It's not the item itself.
Right.
And most of the time, it's not the money itself. I mean, it can be, but usually there's something else behind it.
I'm trying to figure out what would be the emotional attachment behind the police scanner.
I was just thinking the same.
What the hell is that about?
Do we need a police scanner? What do we need one of those?
That one was actually
I ordered one from Etsy, but it never came in.
That one was actually during a dissolution matter, and they were fighting over who got to keep the police scanner.
Shocker.
With things like the dining room table, I mean, we call it red bike syndrome in the estate planning world. Oh. You know, mom and dad got you a red bike when you were 10 and I didn't get one.
That was like me in, you know, when I was little, you know, those Power Wheels, I never got one. My parents never gave me one, but all the neighbor kids had one. I'm still scarred from that.
Okay. So everybody is now supposed to send Morgan.
No, Hot please Wheel. Don't.
Yeah.
I do to, not.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Morgan, do your kids have them? Your kids. Yeah. So you had to make sure that they have them.
Morgan,
have you witnessed any wacky shenanigans in this department?
Yes, many wacky shenanigans. I'll tell you two quick stories. I have one where one of the partners that I have in the firm, basically the client put in their will that they didn't really have anyone that they wanted to handle the estate. And we didn't really know that they had this large, large estate. So they basically said, hey, here, I'm designating this lawyer. You will disperse my entire estate. Well, it was huge. So this lawyer was tasked with not only selling the stuff, but also just giving away all this money. And so could you imagine how fun that was? I mean, this lawyer responds to me that it was amazing. He got to give it to all these amazing charities and was basically asking people like, who has great ideas of how to spend this money well? And he loved getting rid of those, you know, that money. But the second story, this was actually a story that, you know, I've been involved with is I've seen powers of attorney go haywire. And what I mean by that is like we talk about, you can go on Etsy and you can sign 100 powers of attorney, but guess what? When you need them and there's 100 floating around, who's going to be able to figure out what's right? And so I had one where we had a guy that had some real mental health problems and was in and out of rehabs all around the country. And we didn't know if he was truly mentally incapable of figuring things out or if he'd signed away his powers of attorney and we had this bad actor that was doing things behind the back. So we had to figure all this out, but it would have been a lot easier if he had somebody like Lauren who was figuring out the paperwork and had this paper trail rather than these random powers of attorney flying around.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And unfortunately, I have seen some of those situations myself. So you have to be really careful with who gets the copies of your power of attorney.
This just seems crazy to me. And I love every minute of it. But okay, now that we've done this, unless there's anything else that you guys have got to fill my mind with, I think that we should recap our steps here. Do we have any more crazy stories?
Well, I do have one because I think this is just something fun to talk about before we go back to talking about all the legalese. But one of the things that is something I find people talking about all the time right now is disposition of remains. So, you know, traditionally it was like, I'm going to be buried, I'm going to be cremated. There are so many more options than that now. You can be cremated and have your ashes made into a diamond for your kids. So I always tell my girls, I'm like, I'm going to leave you guys a mom diamond. You're gonna have to wear me around all the time. I'm not going anywhere. You can have your ashes added to a man-made coral reef in the ocean. So the fish can come, you know, nibble on your carbon. You can have your body planted at the base of a tree to feed the tree, which is now considered the environmental burial. I'm just waiting for like Elon Musk to develop, you know, the spaceship so you can be jettisoned out into space and boldly go where no person has gone before, right? In your final moments. So,
Diamonds. Diamonds.
I know.
Diamond out of something.
Oh, you can make a diamond out of a
Morgan,
loved one.
I'll wear you if you die, Morgan. I'll wear your remains.
Oh gosh, that's so kind of you.
Or maybe we could have two little diamond aunt, is Andrea. You could have one and I could have one and we could have like matching.
We could be like sister
matching
diamond.
Matching Morgan jewelry.
Matching Morgans.
Thank you, ladies.
You know what's so funny is my boyfriend wants to go in a drawer, which I just find so strange. He talks about it all the time. He's like, oh, I'm not being buried. I'm going in a drawer. In a drawer? I don't get it. Why?
I know. Like, my mother always tells me she's going to go under the Christmas tree. I'm like, that is creeping me out. Please stop saying that.
Thank you.
No one wants you under the Christmas tree. Okay.
I gotta say, like, I don't know. I don't know that I want to be a tree. I definitely don't want to be a coral reef. That sounds horrible to me. I don't want to be at the bottom of the ocean. That's like one of my nightmares. A diamond. Okay. I could like maybe get behind. I don't know. I'm just, okay. It's too much. It's too much. I got to marinate on this. I have to think about it. I will get back to you all and let you know. I do know, however, that I will be posting a link in the show notes to my new Etsy page where I will be selling all different pieces of jewelry that I can turn your body into.
And Lauren will use her new credit card that she opened to buy your body parts.
There exactly. You go.
There you go. All right. So let's recap, because if you spaced out during this episode, don't worry. You need to remember.
We did too.
You need to remember these three things. And this is hard stuff to think about. And we appreciate Lauren doing this every day and coming on to talk about it. So number one, change your power of medical attorney. Number two, change the beneficiary on your life insurance. Look into it, at least know who it is. Number three, either get a will or change your will or any other estate planning documents and consider doing what Lauren talked about, a trust. What did I miss, Lauren?
I think you nailed it. The only thing I would add would be like life insurance, retirement accounts. Make sure you know who that beneficiary is. You may not be able to update it until after the dissolution is final, but you want to know and have a list of, here's the homework I need to do once the divorce is final.
And to add to that, if you are not yet beginning your divorce process, or you're not even going to get a divorce, which is A-okay with us, make sure that you are aware of your finances, take a look at your tax return, and open up a credit card. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Guys, how insightful has this episode been? Holy moly. I have learned so much. I cannot thank you enough, Lauren, for being here and just giving us so much wisdom and terrifying us with this idea of being at the bottom of the ocean on a coral reef. But I know that our listeners are going to want more information about what you do and who you are and all that great stuff. So where can they find you online?
Yeah. So my law firm is Levenfeld Perlstein in Chicago. It's www.lplegal.com. And I would also suggest that for people who are thinking about the estate planning process, you might want to check out the American College of Trust and Estate Counsel, the ACTEC Foundation's website, which is acttechfoundation.org. That is a very useful and reliable website to get information about estate planning. You'll click on the families tab. You're going to find short Q&A videos that talk about different trust and estate topics. They were specifically designed to help educate the public about estate planning and important questions you should be asking. If you think you learned some things today, you might learn even more there.
Lauren, thank you again for coming.
Thanks so much for having me.
See you on Etsy.
Okay, that was a heavy topic, but I've got something good for good news. So we were talking about just light stuff like death and dying. How about we talk about something better, like, you know, aging backwards? Everything that Andrea and I always want to do.
Wait, what did you say? Doing what backwards?
Aging backwards, or just
aging backwards. Uh-huh. Oh, I feel a Let's Be Positive segment coming on.
Here we go. Let's be positive, because we all want some positivity in our lives.
Now we're going to do Morgan's favorite part of the episode and my least favorite part, while I have to scour the internet finding feel-good stories.
Okay, so found this story, and we're always about positivity at the end, especially when we have a heavy episode like we just did. And I found this story about the fact that it basically, the headline is, if you help others, it can make you happier as you age and effectively slow down the aging process, which I know, Andrea, it keeps going, the aging process. I mean, every day you wake up, I wake up, I'm like, what is happening?
I know.
And no matter what you do, it just keeps going. I mean, I wish we were all Benjamin Buttons, but it doesn't appear that it's going to be that way. But on this document that I just read, it's basically saying that if you help others, This behavior in and of itself releases a mood-enhancing hormone, oxytocin. And basically, it was predominantly used to be believed that this oxytocin was only released in younger people. But the experts are saying that for others who are involved in charity work or helping others, or even simply saying hello to people in stores, elevators, and other public places, it's basically releasing this hormone and helping you age better and also making you happier as you age. So ta-da, we've solved the world's problems today.
There we go. I would like to say thank you and hello, Morgan.
Hello.
Thank you.
You look beautiful.
So much.
You look beautiful tonight in your sweatshirt. Your sweatshirt looks great. No makeup. No. Looks amazing. You look like a supermodel.
You look great. Is there anything I could help you with right now?
You could come and clean my house. You could clean up the stinky underwear in the closet that I'm sitting in.
That's a tall ask. I was thinking that maybe it'd be something easier, like, you know, giving you another type of compliment or ordering you a drink or sending you something via Uber Eats. You know, let me know. I am here to help.
I can see you aging backwards. I can see it.
It's working. I think that we, you know, we're really offering people so much on this show, Morgan. And now we can add reverse aging to the long list of reasons why people should be listening to How Not to Suck at Divorce, because this is what we're doing, people. We're here for you.
Yeah,
we want you to tell everybody you know, because...
Yeah, because you know what? We want to ultimately help you not to suck at divorce. And we love and appreciate every one of you. We know divorce is hard. We know it's draining. And guess what? We know the unknown can feel pretty scary. But our goal is to offer you some guidance and some humor.
That's exactly right. And guys, this is not a sprint. It's a marathon. You got to take it as it comes. It's going to be day by day and sometimes even hour to hour. But through all of it, we are right here with you.
That's right. And listen, could you please go to our Instagram page and also rate us and review us on our podcast platform, Apple, wherever you're listening. Those things matter. Unfortunately, in the podcast world, it gives us a thumbs up that what we're doing is helping people. And we love to hear from you. We get a lot of DMs, but there's never enough DMs. We love hearing and answering any of your questions. We've been doing a lot of referral helping lately, no matter where you are. So if you need something, you're not alone. That's why we're here doing what we're doing. So please rate us, review us, DM us. We're here for you.
And late breaking news, you guys, we are now on so many more social media platforms. We are now on Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, as well as Instagram, everywhere it is. Oh, and LinkedIn, literally everywhere under How Not to Suck at Divorce. So give us a follow, reach out. Like Morgan said before, we answer every single message we get, and we do everything in our power to help you guys. So tell your friends, tell your book club, tell your bunco club, tell your ex for all we care. We are here to help everybody.
And remember this, you've got this and we've got you.
Until next time, guys, bye-bye.